This is Fix It. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Nishant. And today we're fixing attitudes of mass destruction with Tim Shriver.
Tim has fixing in his family tree. His father, Sergeant Shriver, launched the Peace Corps during the Kennedy administration. That legacy has influenced Tim's expansive and impactful work. He's on the board of CASEL, C-A-S-E-L, where he helps advance social and emotional learning in early education.
Tim is also the chairman of the Special Olympics, as well as the founder of The Call to Unite. Off the job, he's the father of five adult children and the husband of Linda Potter.
You may have also caught one of the four films he's produced, or one of the many articles he's authored. All in all, Tim is a fixer through and through.
We're so excited to have you on the show, Tim. Welcome to Fix It.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get into it. Tim, what do you mean by attitudes of mass destruction, and why are they such a problem?
Well, I think historically we all know that human beings, as just in our most natural state, we have sort of an attraction to others. We long for love, affection, belonging, and trust. But we also have a fear of others. We're worried when we're approached by that which is unfamiliar, that which is different, that which is often anxiety-producing. When the latter becomes out of control, when the fear of difference rises to a level of toxicity, you get some of the great and horrific problems of humanity, the Holocaust, the desecration, and the extermination of tens of millions of Russians, the Atlantic slave trade, and in the case of people with intellectual disabilities, the mass incarceration and institutionalization of that population for centuries. Why were people with Down syndrome put in institutions for decades and centuries, or people with autism, or people with Williams syndrome? There's a simple answer. They were just too different to belong. And that attitude, when scaled, is the engine of mass destruction. It destroys lives. In our world, if you ask me, as we get closer and closer together, more and more people, more and more dependent on each other, more and more interdependent, whether we want it to be that way or not, that's the reality. The critical feature of survival is trust and openness and respect for people who are different, understanding of people who are different. The destruction of our future will come if we don't check the attitudes of mass destruction.
So, Tim, like you were saying, you know, this is something we've seen definitely throughout history, and some people would make the case that it's our baser instincts and the dark side of kind of humanity. And so I guess when you think about something that seems so ingrained, this kind of othering of individuals, what other factors make this pervasiveness of an attitude of mass destruction so hard to solve? What are some of the factors that
a really good question? It's a really good question. So there's long answers and there's short answers. The short answer, I would say, is two things. First, we've lost a lot of the ways in which we created meaning in traditional human communities, religions, tribes, cultural groups, ethnic cultures, small towns, agrarian communities, interdependent networks of civic associations. Almost all of those have been weakened, if not removed completely in some places. At the same time, and here's the hidden problem, there are new institutions who thrive on dividing us. They actually monetize hate. And I'm sorry to say, a good deal of that comes from politics and the media. There are people, sometimes called the outrage industrial complex. Tune in to most cable news, to many political settings, and you will find words that will lead you to hate others, not to disagree with them, not to listen to them, not to understand them, not to even debate them, but to hate them, to be outraged by them, disgusted by them, nauseated by them. The language is viscerally designed to make you be afraid of other people. So on the one hand, we're weaker in how we feel meaning and connection, because institutions have changed so much. And on the other hand, we're being told you should hate and fear more and more and more. That's a bad combination. That's what results in 50% of Americans saying they're anxious. That's what results in skyrocketing levels of addiction. That's what results in skyrocketing levels of despair about the future.
You know, with these professional outrage artists stoking fires around the country and around the world, and as Kevin mentioned, a lot of these behaviors being seen as intrinsic to humans, it seems like an overwhelming problem to address. And so maybe to start, how are you tackling this really tricky problem of changing these attitudes of mass destruction?
Yeah, so I think there's small ways and there's big ways. You know, the Special Olympics movement is, in my mind, and I know I'm biased, there's 6 million athletes around the world. They together with their volunteers and families and unified partners, run 100,000 games a year. Every single one of those local track meets, swimming competitions, basketball games, every single time you see a notice that says a Special Olympics event will be held this Saturday at local high school, that's a classroom for ending that attitudes of mass destruction. Why? Because the people who have experienced those attitudes, people with intellectual disabilities, are there running and proving they belong without having to almost sometimes even to say a word. They show it. They show up. They run their race. They finish their race. Their arms go up in the air. And you can't help but understand, my goodness, I've excluded that person. I've been afraid of that person. I've had a negative attitude with that person. But look at her. She's the same. She's heroic. She's courageous. She's brave. She has the human spirit of goodness and decency. And your mind is changed. So these are small ways, but they transform everything if you take them seriously. At the bigger picture level, look, I don't have a magic wand, but we need to rethink our media structure. I mean, we just can't survive with the more media you watch, the more unhappy you are. That's the current state of affairs. And we need a new kind of politics. And God knows whether it will come from the right or the left or the center or whatever. It's not a bipartisan thing. It's not a compromise. It's not a begrudging acceptance of the other side. It's a unifier's mindset. People who break down the barriers that separate Republicans and Democrats, black, white, rich, poor, urban, suburban, and rural, the coastland and the heartland, people that bring those groups together, not to compromise, but to come up with new solutions to our problems, to unleash the vision that Langston Hughes wrote about almost 100 years ago of what America can and will be, that place that of equality, absent the kind of tremendously painful and outrageous racism that has dominated our country, and all these other kinds of attitudes of mass destruction. They have to be ended by great political leadership, new forms of media, and bottom-up grassroots engagement. And we have to focus on this is the problem. Division and hatred of difference is the first problem. And unless we solve that, we can't solve any of the others.
I personally couldn't agree more. And I think this episode couldn't be more timely. For our listeners, we're recording this on the day that the Knight Foundation released a report in which they found that a majority of Americans say they see political bias in the news they consume. And a majority think that inaccurate information in the news is intentional. So when you think about these statistics, folks recognize that media is broken and media is fueling these horrible beliefs and these destructive behaviors. So couldn't be a better time to have you on. And with that in mind, given some of these just massive regulations and incentives that are fueling this outrage industrial complex, Tim, I wonder if you have suggestions for individuals, our listeners, what they can do, for example, if they have some spare time on their hands. How would you recommend they use that time to decrease the pervasiveness of these attitudes?
Well, you know, when we did the call to Unite, I'd encourage people to go to unite.us and just pick one or two of the videos. There's over 200 of them there. We were on the air for 25 hours. So believe me, you don't have to watch the whole thing. But pick two or three. But pick two or three from people you don't know. If you're very progressive, you might want to listen to Rick Warren or President Bush. If you're very conservative, you might want to listen to Shaka Sengor or T.D. Jakes. If you're very secular, you might want to listen to Richard Rohr or Kabir Helminski. If you're very religious, you might want to listen to people that are very secular. Listen to the voices of people. What they tended to say in common was that we have to end shaming and scapegoating. When we have pain, and we do, and when we have fear, and we have a lot of it for good reason, the first step is to find your own light and process it in some ways, allow the pain to transform you so that you don't project it onto others and you don't blame and shame others first. First, you gather your strength. This is in part, I use this language cautiously, but we are living in not just a political or an economic or a racial or educational crisis, but it's also a spiritual crisis. And we need new tools to draw ourselves inward and find our inner strength when we face pain. That's number one. And then number two, find solutions to small problems. No one needs to solve, Mother Teresa said, we can't do big things. We can all do small things with great love. I encourage people to find small things you can do with someone across the aisle, across the way, across town. We've seen this this burgeoning interest, which I'm very grateful for, and I hope it sustains amongst white Americans in trying to understand the experience of their brothers and sisters of color. This is a time to do small things with great love. Open yourself up. Find someone across the aisle, across the divide. Listen to them. Maybe acknowledge that they have good ideas. It's very hard for people to do this. If you're a Democrat, you're likely to hear me say, acknowledge the other side as, it's outrageous, you might think. And if you're a Republican, you might think the same thing. Those Democrats, that's outrageous. He's telling me that there's a false equivalence here. I'm not saying there's a false equivalence on all sides of issues. I'm saying there's good people who at their heart are trying to solve a problem. And it's probably the same problem you're trying to solve. And we've got to find new ways to solve them. And the best way to do that is to listen at some level first, and then be creative in whatever way you can. Americans are very ingenious people. I mean, we have this great culture of citizen activism. And now we need it more than ever, but we need it not to be about a fight between Americans, but an alliance among them.
And what I love about this is it requires some degree of intentionality, right? Recognizing who you are, what your own North Star is, but then having the comfort and the drive and the humility to say, you know what, I need to go encounter a different viewpoint and go walk a mile, even if via Zoom, in that person's shoes or via a Call to Unite video. And it reminds me of the work Cass Sunstein has done in his book, #Republic, to talk about how social media and all of these other methods of sharing right now perpetuate bubbles, but it's within our capacity to burst those bubbles, to say, I want to learn from someone else. And so yeah. I think the opportunity for our listeners to share Call to Unite videos, for example, that are slightly different than maybe the kind of Hannity or Maddow that they surround themselves with on a day-to-day basis would be so meaningful.
I hope so. I think, right now we're at this extraordinary inflection point as a country. Big choices we face. I'm not, this is not a political show, so I'm not here to endorse or attack any political candidate right now. But I've seen my colleagues on the left who have gone and talked to MAGA supporters, people of color, talking to people who are white about these issues. And the first thing you got to do is just try to understand, not judge at the beginning. And I've seen these conversations produce extraordinary heart-changing moments for people, because people feel so unheard. If you talk to a lot of people on the right, no one's listened to me. No one's heard me. This is why I'm so angry. This is why. Talk to people on the left. They say almost the exact same thing. No one's listened to me. We haven't been heard. Our side is being trampled and so on and so forth. They're both right in some, and it doesn't mean they both have this equal claim to the truth or to the future. That's not my point. It's just that when you don't feel heard and you feel humiliated, you're a dangerous human being. And sometimes the most important thing we can do is, at least as an initial step, listen. just listen. We teach this to kids as young as second grade, listening skills. How do you listen without judging? How do you repeat back to people what you heard so that they feel heard? And many times, feeling heard is enough to change the course of a conversation, a relationship, or even a country.
Well, Tim, listening is something I think we can all stand to do a little better of, and we really look forward to our listeners following that advice. And thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. I hope, I don't know if we can fix each other, but I hope we can connect with each other. And I hope for the future, not just of our country, but of, I dare say, of the world, that we can find strategies, however small, each of us in our own small way. My uncle gave a great speech over 50 years ago about tiny ripples of hope. Each of us has the chance to make a ripple. And when they cross each other, as he said, from 1,000 different centers of energy, they can achieve the most extraordinary changes. So maybe in this day and age, each of us committing to creating one little ripple of hope around unity, around inclusion, around understanding would result in a great tidal wave of justice and joy. I hope so.
And thank you, Fixers, for joining us. Do you have anyone in your community who's fixing tricky problems? Let us know by tweeting at us at @fix_cast and using #fixer. We look forward to hearing from you and look forward to you joining us for the next episode of Fix It. Thanks so much.